Welcome to Hanks for the Memories. You've got a friend in us. This is episode 35, The Lady Killers from 2004. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski. And Mike, before I introduce our two guests, I feel like I've been so worried about this movie for so long. And then after I watched it, I was like, oh, wait, maybe I don't like The Intolerable Cruelty. Maybe that's the one from around this time that I don't like. Because, you know, I don't love this movie, but maybe also it could have been that I was so worried to watch this that I didn't hate it. I mean, I liked it. It's not like I'm trying to like oversell it, undersell it, whatever. But like, maybe I was just so worried about the fact that we were going to watch this movie that I wound up liking it. We'll get into it.
I feel kind of similar real quickly. This was the last Coen Brothers movies I needed to see. I'd never even seen this movie. And I agree, like thinking about it since I've rated it last night, it's, you know, kind of not as bad as I was expecting. So
The Lady Killers, not that bad. Nice pull quote. Just like Last Temptation of Christ, better than the Bible, says Brian Rodriguez. The laugh you heard just right there is Mike's horror consultant on the Third Time the Charm podcast. He's also one of our social media people on the Cage Club Podcast Network. We have with us Dan Colon. Hello, Dan.
Hello, guys. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to the show. You've been on a Hanks for the Memories before, correct?
I've done some cruise with you guys.
Well, you did the Green Mile.
I did the Green Mile. Yep.
Not even that long ago. That was pre-coronavirus time, so I mean, that's a whole other world.
Yeah, and I've been doing more podcasts lately, so they're all kind of blending together in my mind.
I get you. Well, nice transition there. Another one of my podcast co-hosts, although on an in hiatus podcast, one that ran, I think, all of 10 or 11 episodes, from the fabled Tub Talk podcast. New guest to the Tom Tom Club, we have Bob Fisher. Hello, Bob.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, Bob. Thank you for joining us on this episode.
My pleasure.
This was a kind of a last minute sort of addition here. So before we get into this movie, before Mike gives us a plot summary, where do you fall on Tom Hanks' spectrum? Do you like him as an actor? Do you love him as an actor? Are you sort of indifferent to him? And do you have a favorite Tom Hanks movie or a few?
Yeah, I think Tom Hanks is great. There are a number of his movies that I like, a number that I don't really care for. I think I skew toward earlier, funnier Hanks.
Okay.
My favorite's probably The Burbs.
Okay.
I love the Joe Dante movies and this sort of Hitchcockian feel to that one. I also really like The Money Pit a lot. And then when it gets more serious, I start enjoying him less, I think. I could do without your Philadelphias.
Your Forrest Gump?
I detest Forrest Gump. I think it's like a movie that's harmful to society in a lot of ways.
We're in good company. Nice. No.
Well, I think what's nice about this one, and I don't want to, you know, jump too far ahead in terms of my favorite things, but this is like a return to Hanks that we haven't really seen in a while. Like, I think the last couple episodes, he's been doing some weird different things that he hasn't done in a while, like Road to Perdition. He was playing the heavy, and like, he's done other things recently that are either new or new recently for him. And it's nice to see him be a little weirder, like in a way that he hasn't been in a long, long time.
Yeah, I think the last movie we did, Joey, Catch Me If You Can, was a little hint at what this was going to be for me, because he did like a bit of a voice and gotten into more of like a cartoony kind of character in that movie, I feel. And here he's just gone full tilt, like he's playing dress up and he's off to the races.
So now, Mike, if people listening have not seen this movie, and as of right now, as of the time we're recording it, it is available to stream on HBO Go. So if you want to watch and you have not seen it, you can watch it on HBO Go or any of those platforms. Can you please give us a quick plot summary of what The Lady Killers, the remake, is all about?
Hanks plays Professor Goldthwaite Higginson Dorr, who is a P.F. Tompkins character, if I've ever seen one. So he rents a room at this old lady's house, and him and his cohorts use the basement to practice their music. They are a band. And what they are actually doing is they're going to tunnel from her basement into the cash room of a riverboat casino where it offloads all of its funds. And it's Hanks and his little motley crew. He's got the inside man played by Marlon Wayans. He's got like a football playing heavy idiot. He's got an explosive expert. He's got the digging expert. And what ends up happening is like they succeed. Like throughout all their idiocy and their stupidity, they actually manage to rob this casino and get the money back to their house. But that's when the real trouble begins, and the old lady who owns the house sort of starts catching on to what they're up to. There's some sort of double dealing and backstabbing that happens. The old lady finds out what actually went down because Hanks tells her, and then they decide that they need to kill her, hence the title of the movie, The Lady Killers. And sort of the last half hour becomes them trying to kill this old lady, but ending up dying themselves through all these sort of accidents and mishaps, and whether it be killing each other by accident or on purpose or falling down the stairs, all kinds of incidences, and everybody, including Hanks, ends up dead on a garbage barge by the end of this movie. And the old lady gets all the money and donates it to the city college, I believe. And that's how it ends. That's how the lady killers ends. Everybody's dead. The old lady gets the money and she donates it to the college.
As Hanks opines, the old woman is a more formidable antagonist than one had imagined. Even though she's not doing anything, she's just there. Like, they're all just killing themselves, but she's just there. So now, before we get into our favorite moments, what is everybody's history with this? Mike, you've never seen this before.
Correct.
I saw this once, like 10 or 12 years ago, probably sometime in college and not since then. Bob, is this a movie? I know that I think you went through a Coen Brothers thing a couple years ago, or maybe I'm mixing that up, but where have you seen this movie a bunch? And like, I know you like them sort of as a whole.
I saw it about 2 months ago, and then I rewatched it today.
And is this one, like, in terms of where their filmography is, this rank in the middle and the bottom and the top?
I think this is the worst Coen Brothers movie.
Oh, really? But you, I mean, not to spoil things, but it looks like on Letterboxd you give it a pretty decent score.
What is that, 3 stars?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, the worst Coen Brothers movie is still a Coen Brothers movie. So I will say that I liked it less the second time that I watched it than the first time.
Okay, that's fair. And had you seen it before 2 months ago, or was 2 months ago the first time?
2 months ago was the first time
I saw it. And Dan, what about you? What's your history with this?
So, I mean, like a lot of film students, I also went through a Coen Brothers phase. And I think even to this day, the Coen Brothers might be my favorite filmmakers. I've, of course, seen all of them up to this point, but I hadn't seen this one in a while. And I mean, for good reason. I think I agree with Bob. I think this is the worst Coen Brothers film. I remember liking Intolerable Cruelty more than this. And those two tend to be on the bottom of most people's lists. And I think it's true. This one is not as smart as a lot of the rest are. But still, at the end of the day, it is a Coen Brothers film. So there's a lot of stuff in it that I do really like. But yeah, definitely the worst one.
I guess I've seen them all, too. I mean, I guess that's not really a surprise, but I'm looking in Letterboxd right now. I guess I've seen them all, so who knows? News to me. But okay, so I think we're all, I mean, and Mike, I guess, where does it fall for you? Is this, do you think this is what their worst or one of their worst, too? But I mean, again, is this a Fast and Furious situation where, like, even a bad Fast and Furious movie is still a good movie?
I think it is. I sort of just stayed away from this one because of its reputation, and, you know, I got to stop doing that with movies. Like, I just got to make up my own mind at that point. But, you know, Intolerable Cruelty, I've only seen once. I have a feeling if I rewatch it, I'll like it more. Hail Caesar was at the very bottom of my list for a long time. And then I rewatched it. I was like, this movie's kind of great. So it's weird. I love the Coen Brothers. I'm always willing to give them a second chance. So while right now this sort of is sort of at the bottom level for me, it is very much, you know, like Fast and Furious situation, or, you know, where like even the worst is still really good.
Because there's a lot of things to like here. I think this is a very weird movie. But before we get into what we like don't like or what we would fix or change or whatever, favorite moments, Mike, this is the first time you've seen this. What is your favorite part, favorite moments in The Lady Killers?
That's a hard one. I think maybe J.K. Simmons, everything he's kind of doing here, he feels like he's in the right movie. You know, I kind of have a lot of, not grievances with this, but I think there are a lot of problems with this movie I'll get into. And as far as like things I really like, I generally like this premise though. Like I've seen this a lot in other movies. Dare I say, you know, Woody Allen did a really great version of this kind of story where they rob a bank and open up a cookie store next door and tunnel through, and the cookie store actually ends up giving them more profit than the bank robbery, and they end up being millionaires because of that. Like, I just really like this whole concept of sort of like sneaking around and tunneling through stuff into the, like, it's almost like a very low rent Oceans kind of movie.
I was thinking it's kind of like a Soderbergh thing, especially like a Logan Lucky or an Oceans or anything like that.
Yeah, so I think just by virtue of it being a heist film, and I wasn't really prepared for that because I never saw the original and I don't know anything about this movie except it looked really kind of wacky. Like, I really was able to sort of grab onto that throughout the whole movie, being like, all right, well, like, at least I like the genre if I don't like sort of some of the other stuff happening.
And Bob, what about you? I know this is maybe your least favorite Coen Brothers movie, but what about this? Do you love your favorite parts, moments, characters, scenes, any of that?
I also really like the dumb Ocean's 11 stuff. I think everything leading up to the heist is really great. And I think it highlights this thing the Coen Brothers do that's really good, where, spoiler alert for every single Coen Brothers movie, but nobody ever gets the money at the end of any of their movies. Every one of their heists, the money goes to someone that it's not supposed to go to.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow. I guess I never realized the depth of that. Okay.
They even return Nathan Jr. at the end of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So it's like, even though it is like a dumb Ocean's 11, there's still like a weird Coen Brothers religious morality to it, where the bad guys get their comeuppance and the pious person is victorious.
I think that's an interesting point. And I think that this movie, I was trying to figure out, because this movie very much feels like, in a lot of different ways, kind of two clashing, like, ideologies or two different movies clashing together. Like, there's, like, the upstanding Christian values versus, like, maybe Tom Hanks as the devil, almost. Like, he's got the devil facial features, facial hair, right? And then there's, like, old school versus new school. And there's, like, there's a lot of weird things. And I feel like it's almost maybe too much in here. But, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, it is kind of just good versus bad. And in the end, good prevails because bad is dumb.
Yeah, no, I got that too. I felt like there was some kind of, I mean, I'll get more into it when we talk about what wasn't really working for us, but I also feel like there were things introduced that weren't fully explored that definitely would have helped thematically and otherwise, for sure.
Dan, what about you? What do you love about this movie? Favorite parts or moments or characters or any of that?
I think my favorite thing about this movie, the reason to watch it, in my opinion, is Hanks.
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying that because I'm on Hanks for the Memories, but in so many movies, as much as I really do love Tom Hanks, you know, I can see Tom Hanks as the actor within the movie. I can't think of another movie off the top of my head where he is like a chameleon the way he is in this movie. Like, if I didn't know it was Tom Hanks, I might not initially know. You know what I mean? He's so inside this character with the facial hair and the wardrobe and the accent and the teeth that he's wearing. You know, like, they're almost trying to deceive you in that way. That this isn't really Tom Hanks. This is somebody else. I think the performance he gives in this is just so damn good. And it's so unlike everything else he's done over the course of his career. It almost makes me sad that he's not in a better movie giving this performance. But he's for sure the high watermark for me in this movie. If I had to pick one thing, he's it.
I really like the concept of his character. I think for me, it's just a bit much. Like, I just wanted to pull it back a little. Like, he talks a little too fast. He says a little too much and he's a little too quiet. You know what I'm saying? Like, he clearly seems devoted to this character. And like you say, he becomes this guy. I just wish I couldn't always follow it. So I just wish they pulled back a little bit on him or the rest of the movie. Maybe it's just the rest of the movie can't keep up with him. Maybe that's it.
Sure, I could see your point. I don't necessarily attribute those faults to Hanks, though. That could be the Coen brothers getting too inside their own heads with their writing. You know, he's doing, I think he hits a home run with the material. Like, again, I can't think of another performance he's given where he's disappeared into a character the way he has here.
I also think that he's doing this like really complex thing where he is playing a fraud, right? Like, the guy is supposed to be smart, but he's not really smart, and he's like wearing a costume. So like, is that really who that character is? So his cartoonishness is like another layer of him, of not Hanks performing, but his character performing. And so for like, I think Hanks to be juggling all that stuff is, there's a lot there. Because his character is really actually like stupid. He advertises for the criminals in a newspaper, right? Where he has all of the pretenses of his PhD and he has arguably good vocabulary. He has all of the hallmarks of someone who's like not actually a smart guy, right? So I think for Hanks to like pull that off is really impressive to me because he's doing this like Looney Tunes thing where he's like very Foghorn Leghorn. It works for the movie in a way that it probably wouldn't in another movie.
I agree with Dan in that my favorite part of this movie is Hanks. And I think that it's the first time in a long time that my favorite part of a Hanks movie is Hanks. You know, I agree with you, Dan, that I wish that he was surrounded by a better movie because I think that in a better movie, this could be even more fun. But I'm just glad to see this because I feel like for so much of this podcast recently, I've been kind of on the fence and I'm just like, I know that he's a good actor, but I'm kind of bored by it and whatever. And sort of, you know, to Bob's point earlier about the kind of movies that he prefers, like a lot of what we've done recently, I keep saying it, Mike, it's like, it's been good, but it's not like interesting. Cause it's like, yeah, of course it's going to be good.
Yeah. Like he's good, but he's not really elevating the movie's right. Good anyway. And yeah. And like he's not bringing more to it, but like here, yeah, I feel like he's keeping me interested and you know, whatever, like maybe they should have made a Colonel Sanders movie. I don't know. Yeah. I like it more than I don't. That's for sure.
To Bob's point here, I think what's the most interesting thing or one of the most interesting things about his character here is that I think he is smart, but his biggest flaw is that he thinks he's a lot smarter than he actually is. He does dumb things and he's not necessarily fully a smart person, but I think that he's just smart enough to be dangerous. But like not dangerous to everybody else, although true, mostly dangerous to himself. He's not perceptive of the world around him. And like, if at the end he had just like gone to church, like there's little things that like, it's, you can see the inherent flaws and drawbacks in his character from start to finish. And I think that the way that he's able to play this act, like Dan, like what you were saying about how he's an actor in the role, like I think it's a really interesting thing and a more kind of complex and nuanced performance from him than we've seen in a while, which is weird considering like this movie is not complex or nuanced. Like Catch Me If You Can is like so elaborate compared to this.
Yeah.
And like there he's just playing like great in that movie. That movie is great, but like he's playing just like, you know exactly what he is, you know exactly who he is. Here it's like he's adding all this dimensionality to a character in a movie that's just like, oh yeah, just a bunch of dumb guys failing to get rich quick.
I think part of what you're saying goes back to actually something that you said a lot earlier, which is like about good defeating evil because evil is stupid. The danger of Hanks's character and all the other characters too is that they're dangerous to themselves, right? They're dangerous to the woman that they're trying to attack. They end up losing because they're bad, but specifically because bad is not a danger to good. Bad is always a danger to bad.
Right.
Irma, I forget the name of her character's name, but she's not actually a danger to anybody. She's morally righteous, and her moral righteousness not only results in her getting the money, but like she tries to get everyone else to go to church, right? So she's like the good in there. She's also great. I don't want to miss her performance in this. I think she performs really, really well.
And I think that she's so good that at one point I'm like, is the moral of this movie like just be nice to old ladies? Like she's so like compelling in like what she's doing. That's just like, oh, wait a minute. Like maybe just like respect old ladies. Like, is that the message here? It might be.
She has outdated views on rap music though.
She does.
You know, watching this movie, you know, one of my favorite things about the Coen brothers is that when they make the decision to cast an A-list Hollywood actor in one of their movies, like George Clooney has done 4 movies with them now, but you know, he had a first movie with them and that was huge. And then Brad Pitt came in and he's only done the one, but like, I love when they bring in these A-list actors and make them play wildly against type. It almost always works. You know, they've done 4 movies with Clooney. It makes me wish that they would do more with Hanks because he's clearly so good in this. You know, it makes me a little bit sad.
I thought about that too, sort of their one-timers, right? And I wonder if they just kind of get exhausted or give it their all or, you know, like, because it feels like Hanks left like everything out there, right? And you know that Brad Pitt performance in that movie is like, it's very sort of high energy, right? And so I don't know, it's interesting. I wonder if they're almost like content with it being a one and done kind of thing. But I'm with you, I wish there were more.
I mean, part of the other thing is that like we have to look down the road at the movies that Hanks is doing over the next 15 years between this point and now. And like, it's not all serious stuff. Like he's doing some kind of schlocky mainstream like Angels and Demons and things like that. Not schlocky, but like, you know, not necessarily serious.
I think it'll be mainstream schlock once we get there.
Yes. But I mean, like a lot of this, like he's going to deviate and he's going to stray from comedy in a big way soon. And like I feel like even when the Coen brothers make a serious movie, it's still not in the wheelhouse of like what he seems interested in playing now. It seems like this is kind of like the perfect storm in a way where the two of their interests coalesced in a way that it hasn't again since then.
I think that he's a lot more sentimental than they are.
I think that's fair to say.
His movies tend to play to an emotion that I don't think that the Coen brothers often go to. I wouldn't call them emotional filmmakers.
I almost wonder maybe if that's anything to do with it being a remake of this particular film with like, you know, I've never seen the original.
And neither had Hanks, just real quick. He did not watch the original. He didn't want to spoil his performance based on like however the original was played.
Well, there goes my theory of like maybe he was such a big fan of that movie that he sort of lobbied to be here and get the role and everything. Because sometimes that happens, you know, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
The original is a great movie. Alec Guinness.
Is it like, is it kind of screwball-y or is it more serious?
Oh, yeah. No, it's a comedy.
Okay. So let me transition into what we don't like about this by saying something that I didn't like originally, but I think works better in retrospect. But I also think that it's kind of a little too obvious. Like 16 minutes into this movie, J.K. Simmons basically, not directly, but indirectly kills a dog. Like he's just a dumb guy, which is proving they're shooting a commercial and they want to get this dog to like go to this bowl and like it's a World War One dog or whatever. And the dog dies. And I'm like, that's like the opposite of a save the cat moment. It's just like, oh, this guy killed the dog. And so like, from the very beginning, you're not on their side. And I feel like I was so, not like turned off, like not that I was like offended by it or anything, but like, I was like, oh, like they're explicitly saying already that we're not supposed to be rooting for them, which I feel like in retrospect, based on the conversation, based on where things wind up, makes sense. But I also feel like it's not subtle enough. Like, I just feel like it's so over the top and over the edge. Like, you could show that he's a bad guy or a dumb guy in a way that, like, doesn't kill a dog. Like, it just feels like almost a bridge too far.
It shows that he's too stupid to be able to pull off what he's going to do later in the movie, as far as I'm concerned, for some of the things that, like, they're going to rely on him for. If they knew he killed that dog in that way, I don't think that they would have as much confidence in him or anything. But that also goes, like, an issue I had is sort of everybody but Hanks's introduction kind of fell a little flat to me.
That's chaotic.
See, I didn't have the problem with J.K. Simmons killing the dog, not in the way you did. I mean, yes, it's anti-save the cat, but I don't know. I didn't get that from it. I thought it was played in a really, really darkly funny way. I have seen my fair share of movies that had actual animal cruelty in them. You know, as a horror fan, a lot of Italian horror films kind of have that in them. And I'm never a fan of that.
Would you say that that's intolerable cruelty?
I would 100% say it's intolerable cruelty.
I will show myself out.
In this case, you know, the way the Coen brothers played that scene, I got the humor from it. You know, obviously I know it's a movie, or a Coen brothers movie, a dog is not actually being killed. So, you know, I can enjoy the silliness of that moment. I didn't inherently hate J.K. Simmons for it because, you know, it's ignorance, not malice. You know, it's an unfortunate death, but again, he didn't set out to kill this dog. It wasn't intentional. So I found myself able to forgive that character somewhat through that scene.
Bob, what do you think about that scene? And what do you think about J.K. Simmons' character, I guess, in general? And do you have least favorite parts of this movie?
Well, I enjoy all animal cruelty. And, no, I was on board. I love J.K. Simmons. I think he's great. Marlon Wayans. He's the weak link in this entire movie to me. I think he is, for all of the cartoonishness that Hanks pulls off, I think Marlon Wayans is supposed to be that level of cartoonish. The same way the General and J.K. Simmons are. But there's something about, like, I think maybe Marlon Wayans being a comedian first and, like, a sketch comedy performer. I think he's, like, he's in White Chicks mode or Don't Be a Menace to South Central mode. I don't think that he is capable of doing the performance that he does, which ends up being borderline offensive, I think, the way that he performs it. I don't know that I'm the person to say that necessarily. I think Marlon Wayans is definitely a weak part of this entire movie.
Yeah, again, I'm not in the position to talk about whether it's offensive or not, but I just think that he sticks out in a way that no one else does. Like, everyone is a cartoon to some extent, but I think that they all fit in the world. His cartoonishness, like, feels like it's commenting on something that, like, they never actually get to the point. And I also don't know that they should be commenting on it.
Yeah, I'm with you guys, but, like, I was surprised because, like, I like Marlon Wayans and stuff when he's not being comedic. And so I thought they were, like, doing a reverse with him in this and that he wasn't going to do this type of performance with this character. And I think that leads very much into what I didn't like most about this movie is that I feel like if this just was a period piece.
Yes.
Like, everything would be solved, like, almost immediately. Like, that character wouldn't be, you know, like, this 90s hip-hop caricature. All these modern references, which are very few, would be gone, and, like, everyone else would just feel so much more in place.
Yeah. Like, everybody looks the part, everybody acts the part like it's in the 1940s, except for him. And, like, that's why I think that it feels like they're using him to comment on something. They're using, you know, Irma's character's performance or whatever to comment on, like, you know, how she doesn't like hip-hop. Like, I don't understand why that's all in here. It feels like it's remnants of a different version of a script or, like, a longer script. That I don't know what it is, but it feels like it doesn't belong. And it's just strange.
I get the sense a little bit that maybe this was not originally a Coen Brothers project and they sort of jumped on it later.
Well, that's interesting.
I have not looked that up, so, you know, someone feel free to correct me on that. But it feels that way to me. And the Coen Brothers rarely deal, if ever, with Black culture. So it might just be them approaching something from an angle that they're completely unfamiliar with. And so it's totally tone deaf.
Because I think that if they want to comment on that, if they want to dabble in that world, I think having Irma's character, like, she could be the embodiment of that. I think, because, like, it's almost doing it with, like, a dual-facing thing or whatever, right? Like, she's kind of representing the old-school version of that culture, and Marlon Wayans is, like, the new-school version of that culture, and they're clashing, and Hanks is clashing with each of them, but it feels like that, like, the three sides of this triangle or whatever never actually come together in any kind of meaningful way. Like, it seems like they should all somehow or other unite or fall apart or break apart or conflict with one another, and, like, they don't all get together in any way. It just feels like a lot of, like, intermittent conflicts without any kind of greater purpose or meaning.
Yeah, I cuss on that.
I also didn't like J.K. Simmons' IBS. Like, I just don't like shit jokes, really. Like, I didn't think that. I think he played it well, but I don't, you know, that's not exactly what I'm here for. I'm not I'm not into that. So just wanted to point that out. I do think that the guy who plays the general, who's basically in everything, like I was looking at IMDb, like he's been in like so many things. He's the general in Arrival. So he's made me cry before, which I did not realize.
Oh, he's the guy. Oh,
yeah, he's the guy.
Yeah, with the phone number. Nice.
Yeah, he's all over the place. Like he's been like 130 things. I think the guy who plays the football player is like really good. He's still acting in all sorts of stuff.
Oh, he's Opie from Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, he was like that's exactly what I was about to say. And he's been in like other series like a lot. Like he's really good. Like I think that everybody here is really good. I think that's what makes the stuff that I don't like, the stuff that just feels like a remnant or a relic or just like a beginning and entry point into a discussion or a topic or a theme like they didn't actually get to, like, feel more jarring.
It's rough for me because, like, well, I was feeling there's like a disconnected, I was feeling sort of like there's a choppiness to this, and you know, it just doesn't flow for me, right? And I was like, all of that would have been fine if it was just like funnier or slapstickier or whatever, kind of like if I wasn't supposed to be paying attention to the themes and stuff. But you know, it being a Coen Brothers movie, I felt like I should be sort of gleaming more off of this, and maybe that's my mistake, but I don't know. I feel like being a Coen Brothers movie, like you should be able to sort of dig deeper in things, and this is difficult for me to do that with.
And I feel like there's two other things that I wrote down that I like parts of that just don't go deep enough. Like I like when Marlon Wayans is tasked to kill Irma's character and he can't bring himself to do it because she reminds him of his mother. And I think that was like the way that they're using like the sitcom's laugh track that she's watching to like comment on what's happening in real time. Like I think that's really well done. And I think there's a connection there, but like they don't explore that further. And to the same point, like is Hanks acting in like an Edgar Allan Poe story? Like there's like a thing there that like is kind of interesting and they don't go deep. Like there's all these elements that I really want to grab onto and just they don't flesh out in a way. And I don't know if I'm missing things. I don't know if they're just, if it's because it's a relatively short movie to have so many different disparate ideas that like all kind of get started and like none really finish up.
Yeah. And especially, you know, I mean, when you see someone like Soderbergh do it so seemingly effortlessly with 11 characters, and then you come back to this and you're like, well, the Coen Brothers should be able to do this sort of standing on their head when I've seen some of their other work. And I mean, especially like their comedy, you know, like briefly mentioned Raising Arizona, reference that. Like, you know, that thing is just like sort of perfectly like on beat. And, you know, I was sort of expecting the same sort of rhythm to this, but it just feels like it's off beat. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah. And my primary complaint, like I was going to chime in. I think Bob and I could not be more in sync. I think Marlon Wayans is for sure the weakest part of this film. But rather than echo that, I think that as we've been talking about, this is like a heist film, right? And by now we've gotten Ocean's 11. I think by 2004, did we get two Ocean's films? At least one. We certainly, as an audience, are familiar with heist films and how they work.
We might have had an Italian job by then.
We did have an Italian job for sure, yep.
And because it's the Coen Brothers, I don't necessarily expect them to dwell on the intricacies of the heist itself, because that's not what they do. I think that they lengthen scenes in this movie in the wrong places, right? Like none of these scenes, like I wrote a note somewhere that like these scenes that seem to go on longer than they should are not scenes that propel this movie forward. They're always putting character first over their narrative. I didn't feel like in many of these scenes that the scenes were broadening my understanding of these characters or making me feel more empathetic or feel the opposite of that. You know, like it felt like they were trying to beef up this little script in ways that just didn't jive for me. And it felt like this, was it 104 minutes long, something like that? It felt like a lot longer than that because they just didn't pick the right moments.
One in particular pops out to me is sort of the waste of George Wallace in this movie. And there's like a whole sequence where Hanks is hiding from him and you think like maybe they got history, maybe something's going on. They're definitely going to bump into each other later. But like, no, all that scene was really about was everything before he showed up. And it was like Hanks getting to know the lady. And it's like, what is going on here? I think I'm with you, Dan. I hear what you're saying.
It's the most hollow Coen Brothers movie, I think, for that reason. Like you were talking about, most Coen Brothers movies, there's a lot you can mine from them. Here, it feels very hollow, almost like somebody is trying to parody a Coen Brothers film. There's no real depth to this one in ways that there are in their other films.
I guess that's a good question. Like, if you didn't know who directed this, would you think this is them or would you think that this is a parody of them?
As somebody who loves their films, there are certainly some clear Coen brother hallmarks. So, you know, I think that at the end, none of them get the money and they all end up in that garbage barge, you know, like things like that definitely would tip me off. But you're right. I don't know, just based on some of these scenes, especially the moments with Marlon Wayans, I don't know that I would necessarily suspect it's the Coen brothers.
I hear what you mean. It does feel like imitation to me.
It's almost like they're phoning it in here, which is disappointing.
How did you guys feel about the way that Hanks dies? Because that felt like a really, really just like a resolution that didn't sit with me.
Well, what I liked about, the one part about that I liked was that they set it up from the beginning. Like, I think the first thing that you see in the movie is that gargoyle. They come back to it a couple times. So like they're setting something up there, but I feel like I wish that there was more meaning.
Well, there's also the allusion or the reference back to the raven. But again, it's a reference that rings hollow because I don't think that it's really going much deeper. The way that there's also a reference to the cask of Amontillado that they abandoned too.
I almost thought after it happened, like, oh, maybe the cat should have like done something to cause Hanks's death, you know, along the way.
I love that damn cat.
Yeah. And is that Llewyn Davis's cat? Like, did it run away and end up here or something? But I agree with that. I was glad, and this is going to sound weird, but I was glad he died. But like, I almost wanted them to get the money in like the first act and then the rest of the movie be trying to kill the lady and then dying off on them. So like, I just feel like the core of the film came way too late.
I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. And so like, if all that was just pushed up a whole lot and then Hanks's death wouldn't be so, oh, we forgot to kill Hanks. Like, that's how it feels. It's like, whoops, and by the way, he's got to die. Like, then, you know, if he actually got a chance to have like more of a drawn out death, then it definitely would have been way more satisfying.
And he doesn't die because of any of his vices or anything. Like, all of the other guys that die because directly because of something that they did that relates to one of their flaws, right? I guess Hanks dies kind of because of the raven, and it's like his maybe his literary pretensions kill him, but like that seems like such a reach to me.
Bob, thank you for saying that. I was just about to say that. The other deaths in this movie can be attributed to the bad decisions that those characters made, whereas Hanks's character just seems to be an afterthought.
One way that I was kind of reading this, I don't know if you're supposed to read the movie this way or not, but like it almost feels like for a moment, like a moment right before Hanks dies, that his plan all along was to kill everyone else off. And it feels like, and that's crazy because it's all basically accidental deaths for the most part. In that regard, it's almost like his smugness, his self-satisfaction, whatever, that's what killed him. And like, I think it's maybe just like a look on his face. Maybe it's the realization that like, oh, I'm only going to have to, like, all of the money is mine. Like the last person I was going to share, like split a share with just died. And now I'm like, you know, an even wealthier man. I don't know. But it feels like there's something in that moment where he's like, my plan work to perfection, and then bam, gargoyle head falls on him and he dies. But I don't think that there's anything in the movie that's like set up, like we don't see him plotting or trying to like incept people to kill. Like, it's a weird kind of thing that I was trying maybe to ascribe more meaning to than actually is there. But also maybe, I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. It should have been meaningful, right? Like, and it feels like they wanted it to be, and it just didn't. Like, I think I had an issue with that, too, with Catch Me If You Can, where, like, maybe the one false note was at the end, Hanks is like, you know, I'm a father. And it's like, well, you know, if I knew that at the beginning of the movie, then this relationship would make a lot more sense and be maybe more dramatically fulfilling, too, as opposed to finding that out at the end. Be like, that's why you did it the whole time. Like, it just didn't land with a punch, you know? It just sort of felt like a slap.
Yeah. Does anybody else have any other major thoughts about the Lady Killers before we play a couple games?
I also thought that, I mean, this came after O Brother, Where Art Thou? And O Brother, Where Art Thou? Was sort of revolutionary in the way that it used digital effects and, you know, post-production and color correction and all that kind of stuff. And I thought that this looked worse than O Brother, Where Art Thou? And it was trying to achieve the same thing the way I saw it. Did anybody else pick up on that?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It's not like a great looking movie, which is weird for the Coen brothers, who, I don't know if, it was Roger Deakins the cinematographer on this one?
Yeah, he was the DP on this, yes.
There's still something really weird about a Coen brothers movie that's not beautiful. There is something about that, like, you know, the introductory shot when she's walking up to the police station and the police station is perfectly centered in frame. That's almost like Wes Anderson-y or something like that. But put it next to any of the other Coen brothers movies and it just isn't as pretty.
From the first shot and the whole opening title sequence, just the CGI just looked awful. Like, I understand what they were trying to do. Like, it almost has kind of a storybook quality to it, you know, with that island, that opening shot of the island. So I get it, but like, man, O Brother, Where Art Thou looks so good, and this looks so terrible.
And I wonder if that goes to Bob's point earlier that, like, this wasn't their vision from the beginning. Is it feels like maybe they just came in there, like, instead of having, like, orchestrating everything to fit a vision, maybe they're just like, well, how do we put our stamp on, like, something that already exists?
They did that with True Grit. True Grit's also a remake, and that movie is awesome.
But that was theirs from the beginning, right? That production? And the way I look at True Grit is they did more so an adaptation of the novel more than a remake of the original movie.
Sure, yeah.
So, and that movie just looks and is so good, and I love it. But again, I don't think of it as a remake for that reason. I think it's more true to the source material. This, just, I would love to know more about this production and if this was something that they had planned to do from the beginning. I don't know.
I'm looking on Wiki right now, and like, there's not a lot about production. Like, the Wiki's relatively long, but most of its plot, most of its soundtrack, like, the actual production side of this is just like, oh, they used a garbage barge instead of a goods train from the original movie. Like, there's not a lot to actually say, like, the actual making of the movie. Like, the production of this is just what they changed in the original. So I don't know.
Oh Brother is like a masterpiece. Like, that's almost a perfect film right there. That's one of my favorite Coen Brother movies up top for sure. And then to sort of just hit these depths after, it's just like, oof, it's a bummer that they, like, just kind of tripped. It feels like they're tripping, like, over themselves. Like, what do we do next? I don't know. Let's kind of try and let's do a remake. It's kind of safe in a way. And let's just, like, infuse it with as much as what we just did as possible. And
that's the thing, though. The Coens don't strike me as filmmakers who would make a movie that they didn't really feel like they had to make. You know, by this point, by 2004, they didn't owe anybody anything. They could pick and choose their projects however they wanted. So it's really strange to me that they would decide to make this movie and to have it be so uninspired. You know, like, I can't understand why the finished product is this.
This is making me actually, for the first time in a long time, want to, like, scour YouTube for interviews that came out during press junkets during this time. Maybe they're on there just like, you can get a sense of their body language or whatever through what they're saying, you know, how they're actually feeling or something.
They're sort of a notoriously tough group of people to read in the press, though, because they're, like, real sarcastic and real cryptic.
Any other thoughts about The Lady Killers?
No, my only thing, Joey, is, like, we made it. It's not nearly as bad as what I've heard. I'll put it that way. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is totally watchable.
You know, we are not out of the woods yet. There's stuff coming up that I have not seen, but I am worried about. And there's stuff that I have seen and I am worried about. So, you know, there's more to be worried about in Hanks of the Memories in the short term. But yeah, we made it through, you know, one day at a time. Just one day at a time, Mike.
I would guess that this is mid-level Hanks.
Yeah, like, I have this, like, out of the 31 movies that we've watched, I think, so far, like they're ranking a letterbox in terms of, like, my list that doesn't quite make sense. I have it 15th in terms of, like, movies that I think showcase him as an actor in the movie, how good the movie is. Like, I think it's an average-ish movie. I mean, he's got some real stinkers, which we talked about. He's got some real great ones. And I feel like there's, like, a whole swath in the middle that includes, like, recent stuff like Road to Perdition, which is, like, there's good stuff about it, but there's also not good stuff about it. So I think it's going to be in the middle. I think you're right, Bob.
I kind of agree with you guys. I think the reason I was dumping on it so much is because, you know, it's so easy to love the Coen brothers that by comparison, this one's so much more disappointing. But yeah, you're right. This is not, like, a horrible movie. I just think it's a little wonky, a subpar for a Coen brothers film. But, you know, certainly plenty enjoyable compared to a lot of the other stuff that came out around this time.
Sure. Now, if we imagined for a second that instead of casting Tom Hanks as the good doctor here, the good PhD, if they instead had cast Tom Cruise, do you think Tom Cruise could play the role in The Lady Killers? Mike, I've been saying almost every episode of Hanks of the Memories that I think, yes, I don't know. I mean, maybe, but it'd be weird.
This would be like less Grossman territory for him, but like the whole movie, you know,
yeah.
Like, could he, like, is it in him? Like, I don't think we're ever going to find out. Like, he's never done anything like this. And I don't think he ever is gonna do anything like this. So I don't think he would want to do this. It's weird. That's where I can't even decide. I'm curious to know what our guests think.
Bob, Dan, any thoughts? Could Tom Cruise play this role? Or if not, as a backup, if you don't think that he could play this role, is there someone else in the movie that he could play?
Okay, so I'm going to sort of echo what Mike was saying. I think if this was pre-Tropic Thunder, I would say no. Tropic Thunder is the only movie that would give me any sort of inkling that Tom Cruise could play a character like this. So I think he's certainly capable, but whether or not he would make a movie like this, I don't think he would. I would love to see it, but I think he could, and it would be just as weird, if not more so, and honestly might benefit the character a little bit by its weirdness. You know, this is a Coen Brothers movie. I always lean into the weird, right? So
it just made me think that, like, you know how he probably gets offered everything first, right? So, like, he even probably got offered all of those, like, big muscle-bound babysitter action movies that, like, Vin Diesel and everybody else ended up doing. Like, it would be like if he ended up taking those instead of, like, what he ended up doing, you know? But I'm sure those scripts, like, came to him also and everything. But it's just a whole genre he's avoided his entire career.
I could see Cruise playing, like, a lump as sort of a dumb pretty boy.
Oh, okay. I can do that.
I think that would work. He's, like, shirtless for the whole thing, doing push-ups. You know, like, what did Lump do for the entire movie? He had nothing. He didn't do anything. He didn't do one thing.
No, he dug, and he just didn't play whatever he calls the trombone, but it's not the trombone. I don't remember what he calls it.
The butt sack.
The butt sack.
He's the muscle, right? And when they're like, oh, who are we going to get to kill the lady? They don't immediately go to the muscle. Like, it seems obvious to me that he's the one that should do the killing. He's not doing anything else.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, but like, what is, like, Marlon Wayans isn't doing anything else. He's just the inside man.
No, but they need him to be the inside man. I mean, yeah. And he papers up the wall as well.
I want him to do all of, like, the housework around my house. Like, he does such an immaculate job of, like, you know, with the air dryer, like the hair dryer. Like, that's incredible. Like, he's great at that.
What about Tom Cruise in the Marlon Wayans role? And then he's just playing, like, a, you know, obviously not a black man, but like a Miami douchebag type of guy.
What about Chet Hanks as the Marlon Wayans?
Oh, fuck yes. Sorry for the cussing. Yeah, that would rule.
How can we get Colin Hanks in there? How can you? And I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I like Chet Hanks in that role. Go ahead.
I would love to see Tom Cruise in any Coen Brothers movie, just because, you know, I never would have thought George Clooney would have made such a great Coen Brother player. You know, George Clooney is an A-list movie star who's known for his charisma, but when he does Coen Brother movies, he plays morons. And I think Cruise is certainly capable of playing a dumb, goofy idiot. And so, yeah, I don't, maybe not this movie, but I would certainly love to see him play a character in some Coen Brothers movie at some point. That'd be awesome.
Cruise could have also been like Woody Harrelson's role in No Country for Old Men. He would have been great at that. There's lots of stuff in the Coen Brothers catalog that he would, I think he'd fit right in.
Yeah, I do wonder though, like, because what you were saying earlier, Mike, about like, could he keep up the Les Grossman energy for the entire movie? Like, if we're talking about this movie or another movie or whatever, there's like two conflicting things here. Like, it's kind of the ego thing we talked about on Cruise Club. Like, basically from here on out where we are, like after Rock of Ages, like the last 8 years of real life, like he hasn't been a supporting role. He's always been a lead role. So you got to check that at the door and be able to go like to a supporting role in theory. Or what you said about the energy level, like his weirdest, his most hyperkinetic energy performances of Rock of Ages and Magnolia and Tropic Thunder, they're all 5 or 10 minutes of screen time, right? So like one of those things has to give, right? Or we're going to have like the most ongoing, persistent, hyperkinetic performance that we've ever seen from him, which would be, yes, please, let's do that.
I think if Cruise gives up the ego and starts doing supporting roles like Magnolia again, I think he'd probably win an Oscar eventually.
We talk about a lot on like the different podcasts that we've done about how like Nicolas Cage, I mean, he's done it a few times, but like instead of being a supporting character in a movie that could earn him an Oscar, another Oscar, he is an Oscar winner after all, he's just being like the leading man in a straight to VOD schlocky movie. Keanu, after having like basically a career of that, has now since kind of deferred and been like weird, interesting characters in more interesting things. Zac Efron, to that point, has done the same thing over the last handful of movies too. Like there's weird trajectories that we're following in these actors, and it feels like, unfortunately, although they're more fun, Cruise is in that Cage fold where like he has to be the lead in every movie. And yeah, they're great movies, and like Mission Impossible, Fallout, and like Rogue Nation, everything, like they rule. But it's like if you really want to go to that next level that we've seen a couple times, like in the Kubrick movie and in Paul Thomas Anderson or whatever, like you need to give up something, like cede a little bit of control.
To sort of follow up Joey's point, Bob, you may not have heard this, but I think on my first appearance on Cruise Club, I don't remember which movie it was, I voiced my suspicion that, you know, 1999 was the best year for Tom Cruise because he allowed himself to be in Magnolia and Eyes Wide Shut. And I think that that was the last great year we'll get from him, possibly because we got to see so much of the real Tom Cruise. I think maybe he tapped into something that was a little more real than he intended. And I think he just retreated from that. And now he's just doing action movies. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case.
I think that sounds absolutely right to me.
It's a bummer. I mean, you know, it's never too late. All it takes is like to be in like, I don't know, like a Tarantino movie or like another, like a Coen Brothers movie, like we've been saying, or like a Safdie Brothers movie. Like, I don't know, man, like give him Uncut Gems too. I don't know.
To your point about the differences between, for example, Keanu and Nicolas Cage, I think that's not so much a question of artistic choices as it is financial responsibility.
Maybe, possibly, but we've also heard from Nicolas Cage, maybe this is just him lying through his teeth, I don't know, but like, it seems like he cannot sit still, he has to be working all the time, and it feels like Keanu is able to, or willing to, or financially able to, because of the Matrix set for life, whatever, that he's willing to wait for more interesting parts, whereas Nicolas Cage is like, I have 6 weeks, I can't just sit at home, let me go shoot like a VOD movie in New Orleans for 6 weeks. I don't know. It's a weird thing, man. It's a very, very weird thing.
I mean, I don't think Tom Cruise can stop moving at this point either. It's just that he's sort of like now in a certain stratosphere where, yeah, it seems like he's in a comfort zone.
Where he's making Tom Cruise production.
I mean, he's running right now. He's sprinting down my street with his shirt on.
I think what you guys are saying is a really real possibility. Just like he might have seen too much of himself in his films and retreated and gotten a little scared. And is just like holding back a little bit. And not even holding back, but like, you know, he's just doing what he wants instead of challenging himself on that level, right? Like now it's more physical for him, it seems. So we'll see.
Very important follow-up question. And I don't know, I think the answer might be, I actually don't know how to phrase the question anymore because I get confused myself because we changed this question.
Is he still America's dad?
Is he still America's dad? Yes, because for a while we were asking the question, Bob, does he do something in this movie to set him on the road to becoming America's dad? Because that's like how people see him. But we realized about 5 or 10 movies ago that, yeah, he's already America's dad. Like he's established himself, you know, even in the front half of his career, he's already there. So now is he still America's dad or is he not America's dad? And I feel like he might not be in this movie.
Well, he seems more like my dad in this movie. Bad teeth, not as smart as he thinks he is.
Well, all right, that's fair. So I'm going to say no to America, but yes to Bob.
Yeah, Tom Hanks is my dad.
That could be a good autobiography. Live blog 2, Tom Hanks is my dad.
Get sued by Chet Hayes.
Dan, Mike, any thoughts? Is he still America's dad in this?
I would say not based on the character, but the effort he put into the performance, absolutely.
Yeah, no, this character is unredeemable, you know. I would not let him near children.
He does kind of have, like, dad at community theater energy, though. Like, diving into the part, making, you know, wearing fake teeth.
He is sort of the dad of the crew, right? Like, I mean, you could say that much, I guess, but all of his kids are maniacs. So
yeah, but this question is not like, is he the Dominic Toretto of this movie? It's like, is he America's dad?
Do you guys think that Hanks could play Dominic Toretto?
I think he could play Papa Toretto. I'd like to see that in a
flash. You want either Cruise or Hanks, either one. You just want a Tom playing Papa Toretto.
Yeah, or my brother Tom. We'll see. Okay. He's not an actor though.
So now the final thing we have to do is nominate this for some awards, the Woodies, the Tom Hanks Awards. At the end of the podcast run, we are going to have people listen to the podcast vote on the best and the worst of Tom Hanks. Best film, worst film. Again, I don't know that this is either. Is it? And I also don't know that it's best of the worst, most fun, bad film. I don't think this falls there either.
No, I mean, it's crazy. We've seen like really bad movies from time to time here on Hanks for the Memory. None of which are like, you know, his fault or anything. Like he didn't make them bad, but like he was in some really real clunkers. This does not reach those depths.
But the only potential award I might give this movie, because I don't think it deserves best ensemble, is Hanks for his performance solely that. Like, I think that's the best part of this movie, hands down.
Well, I think that's the next thing. And I think what, I wouldn't say that it's best performance, but we have best, worst, but I think what we have is most wasted Hanks performance. And I think that's like what we've been getting at, because he's great in this movie, supported or propped up by almost literally nothing else.
Yeah,
I would agree with that.
So Dan says he doesn't think it's best ensemble. Do we think best ensemble or best Hanks actor, male or female? Is there anybody in here or the crew as a whole? Do you want to say Irma?
She's great with what she's got to work with, for sure.
She's great.
I'd put her on there. I mean, again, like I feel like she kind of gets a little wasted, you know, towards the middle of this movie. Like she could have been way more sort of intricate, like bumping into them, doing their work and having more one-on-one interactions with everybody and stuff.
She plays Marva Munson. That's the character's name. All right, let's see here. What else, what else, what else? Best fight? I don't think he really gets into a fight, does he? Like a fist fight?
No.
Best dance scene? No. Best party scene? No. Best Hanks outfit wardrobe? Yes?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, he's also got sort of like a Mark Twain thing happening. Like, I don't know what it is about Southern gentlemen that love to deck themselves out in ivory, but...
Then I'm going to say best death, gargoyled onto garbage barge, for sure.
Because it's like our only death, I think, so far. Oh, Private Ryan.
We've had 5 deaths.
Oh, we've had that many?
Well, we had a fake death in Castaway. He had a funeral that we did not see. He dies in Philadelphia, the most somber death of all. He gets gunned down a road to perdition, and he gets shot and killed in Saving Private Ryan.
Okay, that's right.
Best line or best freakout? There is that, you know, she's a more formidable antagonist than we anticipate, but I don't know if that's necessarily one of his best all-time best lines. Is there anything that he says in this movie, all-time great best line or best freakout?
Nothing that sticks out to me.
He has got such flowery language, but none of it stands out. No particular line stands out among the rest as, you know, classic.
Yeah, it's all so flowery that, like...
Right,
yep.
It gets kind of lost in there.
Then there's no Hank's love story, so the only other category that we have here is best soundtrack, theme, score. Is this movie worthy of the best? And I don't know. I don't think that it is.
Oh, I thought the soundtrack was great. Carter Burwell. I like the music, but I don't know. I don't know how to compare it to his other movies.
This is a very difficult category because, like, we are lumping so many things in here.
I would say that, you know, Carter Burwell's score is comparable to Roger Deakins' cinematography here. It's not bad, but it, like, doesn't stand out to me among the best work they've done.
Mike, what about you? You're kind of the deciding vote here.
No, I still got the Catch Me If You Can theme stuck in my head. So, like, it's got a, you know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't really stack up in some other ways to other things too.
You're also not touching that Dragnet rap.
I was just actually looking at the City of Crime on here. I was gonna say, you know, if you want something new stuck in your head, just look at City of Crime or That Thing You Do, or just Jesse's song from Toy Story 2 if you just want to sob uncontrollably for a while. So 4 nominees: most wasted performance, best outfit wardrobe, best death, and best non-Hanks actor female for Irma P. Hall as Marva Munson.
If this one's best death, I will riot.
It's only on there because there's, like, so few, I think, right now, right?
Like, in a vacuum is my favorite death so far, but, like, in terms of meaning overall, I don't think that it is. But, like, how do you compare that to, like, a fake death in Castaway, him dying from a complication from AIDS in Philadelphia?
And then getting shot twice.
I don't know. Anyway, so Mike, well, next week on Cruise Club, you and I are talking about Oblivion, the Tom Cruise sci-fi film.
That's a good one.
I'm very excited to see that one again. And then in 2 weeks, a movie that I have not seen here on Hanks of the Memories, we've got The Terminal, where he falls in love in an airport. Is that what that's about?
Is that another Spielberg movie, I think?
Yes, it is.
Oh, we forgot it. That was a Spielberg. Oh, man, I totally forgot about this movie. Oh, yikes. At least the Tucci will be loose again. Stanley Tucci returns. So.
Very exciting, question mark, I guess. But yeah, so we've got Oblivion next week, and then in 2 weeks, right back here on The Terminal. But Dan, Bob, thank you both so much for joining us. Dan, is there anywhere that people, if you want people to find you online, is there anywhere that you want people to go?
Predominantly on Twitter at Dan Colone, DanColon. I'm on Letterboxd, same username if anyone's interested in what I have to say about certain movies. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
And you're on Mike's podcast, Third Time's a Charm, seemingly every month.
That's what it seems like these days.
And Bob, anywhere online that you want people to find you?
Nah, it's okay.
Cool. All right. Well, you can go. People can go listen to Tub Talk.
Yeah, don't plug Tub Talk.
Yeah, go listen to Tub Talk.
Shout out Thrashy. But for all things Hanks for the Memories, you go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, hanks@cageclub.me. Come back next week on our Cruise Club feed for Oblivion, and come back here 2 weeks for The Terminal. Those sound very similar, I think, in title. Maybe I'm conflating things, but I know that they're wildly different movies, but Oblivion and The Terminal. You find The Terminal in Oblivion. I don't know. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Dan Colone and Bob Fisher, and we'll see you next time right here on Hanks for the Memories.
I just love the works of Mr. Edgar Allan Poe.